good morning. It's my understanding that you've been learning your data, Russell Hall and Caruso. And I'm here to try to discuss something that you won't see directly inside of your Shulchanarach, which has very practical relevance. I work in kashrus, so my life deals with kashrus, which you'd be surprised to know has very little to do with Russell Hall and Caruso. You may think, well, I learned about kashrus, that's not for here. It has not as directly related as you might think it is, industrial type of kashrus. We're going to talk about something that's very practical for people who work in industrial kashrus, and even in local kashrus, as in, you know, pizza shop, restaurant, kind of, you know, local kashrus, something very relevant, which, again, you could learn children are backwards and forwards and never come across this very real issue. The truth is, you'll see as we move along that I have a bigger thing to see from here than the specific issue we're going to talk about. We'll get to that also. But the specific thing we're focusing on is something called steam, cooking with steam. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the practical, a little bit of the halacha of it, let's make some sense out of what this is. The first thing is, this is something that you have seen in in Kukhet, it's also Kukhot Gimel, that's really where it comes from, that it's something, if you cook up a pot of milk, then the vapors that come out of that pot are considered to be milk. The vapors that rise out of that pot of milk are milk. The steam that comes out of it.
There's a difference
between
vapor and steam.
Okay,
vapor is air, it can't see it.
Okay.
It's wet.
Okay, well, we'll say the steam that's coming out of it is coming out is considered to have the time of what was cooking in there. So, in the case of Shulchan Aruch, you have milk cooking, and on top of it, the meat's hanging to dry. There'll be a shayla b'chol for that. That din, most people don't do that and hang dry meat over there. They're smart enough to know that. But one of the din that is some practical applications of that, nothing to do with that with shayla. Are whether whiskey is considered to be had the din of what it came from. For example, the din of Shulchan Aruch says when you ferment sugar into alcohol, the fermentation doesn't go more than until that 13-14% strength. So a typical wine will never be more than 12-14%. Once it gets past that point, it's time. There's no more alcohol form. If you want to make something with a stronger alcohol content, they discovered a couple hundred years ago, what you do is you boil you raise the temperature of that wine, let's say take the wine, the alcohol boils out, and the liquid stays behind. The vapors of the alcohol, the steam of the alcohol boils out at a lower temperature, in the 170 degree range, it boils out. You catch those vapors and you condense them, turn them back into a liquid. So now what you're catching is a much stronger version of what you originally had. You had originally 14% wine, and when you concentrate it, that's what you do. You get only the alcohol out. You can make what we call brandy, which will be 40% or 60% alcohol, or something like that. So that's a shot on the rebush, but it actually has a din. The rebush is around the time when they came up with this idea of how to do this. And he says that yes, it is considered to have been the vapors that came out, the steam that came out is considered to be the same as the original food that it came from, the beautiful chasm. And think about that for brandy, like for samyayin, and for chavas. Another chavas should have the din of the chavas that it came from. And another variation of that, more modern, like 100-year-old chavas about that, is if you make carbon dioxide from something that's chavas, that's also the chavas. Do those, in that case, it really is vapors that come out of the fermentation, do they have the din of what they came from? Carbon dioxide is a byproduct of all kinds of different fermentations. And if the base that it was made from is chametz, does the carbon dioxide that it comes from, is it also considered chametz or not? Okay, those are shaylos. There are more twists to that shaylos. But that's just like examples of this din, that when you cook something up, the steam that comes out of it is considered to have the din that it came from. I want you to just put that, you probably know that already, and we'll put that on the side for a second. Okay. And now I'm just going to get to some the way it works in a plant, some information. Okay. The first thing is like this. When you cook up a pot of water, okay, there's a scientific term called the BTU, you've probably heard that term, which stands for British Thermal Unit, which is the amount of heat that takes to raise 1 pound of water 1 degree Fahrenheit. That's what a BTU is. That's the definition of a BTU. So, if your air conditioner puts out 5,000 BTUs, it's giving out enough energy to do that. So now, if you have a water at its coldest state, which is 32 degrees, right before it dies, to get that, a pound of water from 32 degrees to 212 degrees takes 180 BTUs. Right, from 32 to 212, each 1 degree takes 1 BTU. So to go from 32 degrees to 212 degrees takes 180 BTUs. What would you get to take it from 212 degrees water to be 212 degrees steam to make it boil? 540? No, it's more than that. 970 BTUs to get it to go from being 212 degree water to being 212 degree steam. If you get that same 1 pound, to get it from 180 degrees to 181 degrees was 1 BTU. 181 to 182, another 1 BTU. To get it from 212 degrees steam to 212 degrees water to 212 degrees steam takes 970 BTUs. Okay? So what scientists call these things two different areas. They call the first heat, to get it from 32 to 33 to 34 to 35, they call that sensible heat. Because for every BTU you put in, you get a result. You get 1 more degree higher in temperature. To go from 212 water to 212 steam, they call that latent heat. That heat is just sitting there. It's been pumped in. You're pumping in more and more heat into the thing. You don't see anything out of it. Okay? So when you have steam, that steam, the steam at 212 degrees, doesn't just have 212 degrees worth of heat inside of it. It has 1,000 degrees worth of heat inside of it. Okay? It is 212 degrees hot, but the thermometer measures 212 degrees. But it has latent heat, another 970 degrees of latent heat sitting behind there waiting to come out. Okay? It's just sitting there. Okay? And in fact, this is a crucial piece of information from the Stanley steam system. Latent heat transfers very quickly. Okay? When steam hits something, it gives over its latent heat very quickly. So if that 1 pound of steam hit a pot, it would transfer over these 970 BTUs instantly. The other stuff would transfer over very slowly. It takes a long time to get that heat to transfer. Which means is that steam is a very efficient way of heating food up. Steam carries a tremendous amount of energy in it, and it transfers very quickly. So you have a huge vat that's as big as this room full of ketchup, and you need to cook it up. Okay, so if you cooked it up with hot water, if you put hot water next to it, it would never cook up. It would take a month to cook the thing up. If you pump steam at it, the steam would give over its heat very quickly and would much quicker heat it up. Okay? So what companies do is, there's such a thing as putting the steam right into the food. They put the steam right into this, let's say, into an apple juice. They might put the steam right into it. But usually what they do is they do it indirectly, which is to say they have a big kettle. The kettle is double walled. The inner wall holds the ketchup, and then there's a second layer that's an inch away from it, and in between those double walls, steam flows through there. So if you go into a hotel, maybe even a yeshiva kitchen, and you want to see how they cook up a big thing of soup, okay, they usually do not have a fire right underneath. There isn't a little fire burning under there that cooks the food up. I don't know how the yeshiva has it here, but there isn't usually a fire there. It's not safe and it's not efficient. What there is there's a boiler someplace making steam. That steam comes and in the kettle just looks like a nice little bowl, but really there are two walls. The soup is on the inside, and between the two sets of walls, there's steam flowing through this, and that steam very quickly can heat it up much faster than if you just put hot water into that place over there. Okay? And it has tremendous efficiencies to run like that. And that's the common way you cook things in a plant. You walk into a factory, you'll see into a hotel, you won't see fires burning someplace. When they want to start cooking something up, they don't light a fire or turn something on. They just open up the steam valve. The steam waiting all over the plant, the steam comes in and heats the food up. Okay? Have I lost you guys so far? You still here? You're still here. Okay. So this is a very common way to cook things up in factories, and even in like a bigger facility, even a yeshiva kitchen might have that. Yeshiva might not have a boiler. Yeshiva might have just a little portable unit, meaning underneath the kettle is a little fire burning, heating up water, which is going around the jacket of the pot of soup or whatever it is. Okay, Now, so what happens is when your steam comes and hits the pot, the steam comes from the boil and comes and hits the ketchup pot, it gives over 970 BTUs into the ketchup, and the ketchup is getting warmer. Okay? Well, then what happens is instantly, as soon as that heat gets transferred, what happens to the steam? It turns back into water. Right? It just lost its latent heat. So it turns from being 212 degrees steam to being 212 degrees water. Well, that water, what happens to that? Where does that water go? So it's in the jacket, it's in between the two layers of the pot. The water drips down to the bottom. Okay, now you could let it go out into the garbage if you wanted to, but that would be foolish because this water is hot water. You could reuse that water to make more steam for the next pot that has to be cooked up. This water, it was cooked up, they took it out of the sink, it was 60 degrees. Okay, they took it and they heated it up to 212, then they heated it up to turn it into steam, and now they cooked up the ketchup with it. Okay, now they have this 212 degree water that's been used already. Well, why take fresh water from the sink when you can take hot water that's already in this, you already have hot water in here, reuse it. And that's exactly what they do. They take this water, which they call condensate, it condenses on the in the pot, it condenses, they take the condensate back to the boiler, and they reuse it. They use the same water. So they have to add in new water here and there, but basically they keep using the same water again and again. Okay, that water, they fill up the boiler with water, they heat up their ketchup today, and then the water goes back and heats up the next round of ketchup. Okay, it keeps on going back and around and around in this loop within the plant. Okay, now, when you have a yeshiva kitchen, everything is wonderful and beautiful. Okay, but I was recently in a company that they have three divisions to this company. One makes sugar, one makes hard-boiled eggs, and one makes ham. Okay, so the company, it cooks all three of them with steam. So the steam that cooks up the ham, okay, the steam cooks up the ham, it condenses, and the liquid goes back to the boiler, then that water in the boiler gets heated up a little bit more and goes and cooks eggs. And it goes and cooks sugar. Then it goes and cooks ham. It does everything. It's the same steam that goes to all three parts of the company. And we were involved with another company that two companies share a boiler. Okay? One company produces foods that are used in ingredients that are used in foods like antifoam, whatever, an ingredient that's used in food. And the other one makes biodiesel. Okay? Now in that case, the biodiesel company happens to use for their fuel source soybean oil, which is kosher. Okay? But they could have just as well been using leftovers from McDonald's. Right? They could have just as well been using animal fat to do their boiler. And these guys, they use loads of steam. And what happens to the steam? The steam doesn't go into the food. The steam is on the outside of the jacket. It's called indirect contact with the food. It condenses, and the water goes back to the boiler. Okay? So now, in fact, in hotels, Rabbi Eisenbach from our office, when he sits down with a hotel that wants to have a kosher kitchen, and we're going to build a completely kosher kitchen, he says to them, if you want to have a kosher kitchen, your soup pots that are going to run on steam cannot be connected to the steam system for the whole hotel. The hotel's got a steam system that heats up hot water for people's showers and does all kinds of things, including cooking up the food in the trade kitchen. So he tells them, no, if you want to have soup kettles, those soup kettles are going to have to be freestanding, meaning it's its own cute little unit that the kettle is here, and underneath it, there's a fire that's heating, or an electric coil that's heating up water, turning it into steam, and just using for itself. It doesn't share condensate with anybody else. It's when you're building a kosher kitchen, if you only look at your kosher kitchen, you might not realize that the tray that they're cooking down the hallway is coming into your kosher kitchen also. Not in any way that looks from the outside, but through this condensate. So, I'm a little bit jumping. So what happens? So we just said this condensate is created, but doesn't touch the food. It touches one side of the pot, and on the other side of the pot is the tray food. Okay, in our case, this ham being cooked, and the steam is shearing a wall with the ham. On one side is the steam, and on one side is the ham. And then the steam turns into water, so now there's water on one side of the pot, and on the other side of the pot is ham, or in the hotel kitchen. In one kitchen, they're making tray soup. Okay. And so in that soup that they're making, the steam, or the water, is on one side of the wall, and on the other side is the tray food is being cooked. Now that water then goes back and is used to heat up the kosher food also. So Does that make time transfer or doesn't make time transfer? Okay, so that's a din. You learn the Tzadi Beis. Okay, that's a din that you learn. When you learn this din, if you've never heard of a steam system, in a million years you can't imagine what this case could ever be negated to. Because it happened that a drop of milk is going to fall on the outside of a place of a pot. It seems like such a far-fetched case. Okay, but this din is very relevant to exactly this case, which goes on every single day in factories. I'm telling you extreme cases, but usually the cases are similar, which is the same company makes some kosher things and some trade things. This side of the factory is all kosher, this side is all trade. Well, they kosher in between, or whatever they do. But they come into kosher, and they start making kosher products, but the same water and steam that was used to heat up the product yesterday when it was trade is now heating it up today when it's kosher. So what does it help the kosher? You kosher your kalim, and then you come ahead and heat it up with trace water. So, what's the din in Tzadi Beis? So we say is, if the blia, the blia does go through the kli, if there's trace inside the pot, and there's water on the outside of the pot, or there's trace water on the outside of the pot, and there's kosher food on the inside of the pot, what's the din? We say this, the tam does go through. So that means is that in all the cases that I'm telling you, where they, what they call, they shear the steam system, and they get the content, it goes back to the boiler, and they reuse it. So what's the din? The din is that the blia is transferred, and it should make the food trade. Now, in that din, it's really not so posh that the blia really go through. If you remember from Tzadi Beis, it's a machlokes where the blia go through, or said it this way, it's a machlokes how much blia go through. Okay, but we're machmir, the din, Shulchan Aruch says, to be machmir that blia do go through, but we're being machmir in time suffix that blia go through, or how much blia go through. So let's look at the question. So now we heard the shiloh from Yerideh Zarah. We just opened up a Shulchan Aruch, we say, steam coming out of trade food is trade. Steam means it carries blia to it. The pipas chol that falls on the outside of the pot does make blia go back and forth. So the steam that's hitting the outside of the ham, not touching the ham, it's just touching the pot that holds the ham, gets blia to it, and then it transfers back into that water, which then goes cook up sugar or red. Okay, so on the surface of it, if we go, so to speak, just by the rules, this thing is a huge problem. But potentially, the blia are transferring from the trade in the company or in the hotel to the kosher side. Okay, but now let's look at it from a different angle. A scientist, if you ask a scientist, if any time transfers to it, he'll tell you lost too much. No time goes through from the pot through the walls into the steam. Okay, now, we keep talking about a pot. There are more sophisticated ways of doing this, but they're all the same variation of the same shiloh, which is blia going through something, through a kli, through metal, into steam or water that's on the other side. Okay, now, there are even people who have suggested reasons why, in the days of Chazal, blia did go through, and that nowadays they don't go through. Okay, among the theories as to why they wouldn't go through are, well, we use different alloys of steel than they did. Okay, the word metal is a generic term that just means means metal, but really, even the word steel doesn't have an exact definition. It does, but for us, it doesn't have an exact definition. You can mix all different kinds of metals to get different properties. Like for example, the most famous example is stainless steel. Okay, steel rusts, but stainless steel doesn't rust. Remember, they had chromium in it and doesn't rust. Okay, so you could, by changing the alloy, by changing the mix of metals that are in the metal, you get different properties out of it. Okay, so one explanation for this is, well, we use different alloys than they did, which is true. Over time, people have come up with new ideas, like, for example, stainless steel, okay, that are different alloys, or even we use aluminum that they used to never use aluminum. They wouldn't use it in the steam system, but we use alloys that they didn't. So maybe our alloys don't allow for you to go through and theirs did. Or people say a different thing. I'm accepting from the person who I heard it from that it's true, but that it used to be the way to make pots was you took a big sheet of metal and you banged it into shape to make it into the shape of a pot. I don't know if that's true. This is what they tell me, that they bang it into the shape of a pot, okay, which leaves microscopic holes in the metal. From the hammering it out to make it into a chip, leaves microscopic holes that bleeds coming through. Not visible holes, and not that food passes through, because no one would cook in a pot with a hole in it, but these microscopic holes. And we don't do it like that. We forge our pots. They liquefy the metal and put it into a bowl, and then it takes its shape. Okay, so there's no holes in it. So whatever, it doesn't make a difference as if there are signs. There are, this is trying to as if save Chazal. Say that we don't have Leahs and they did, we can explain why they did. Okay. They're thinking from a different side. Companies, when they have a steam system, make tremendous effort that there should be no liquid in that steam system. There is steam passing through, but if you would look at the pipe, it would be absolutely clear. And I have. I was in a place that has a glass model of a steam system. I went there to learn about steam. And you can see into the pipes. You can see a lot of other things also, but you could see in, and it's absolutely clean and pure. So then we can talk about trials, about whether there are bleas in things that have no vapor to them, no liquid to them. It's completely clear, an ear, as if ear. There's no vapor in between them. That has to do with the carbon dioxide trials. Okay, that's another possibility. On top of that, the companies, I'll switch the other way, people who work in kashrus have tasted this condensate, okay, and we'll see why in a second. They tasted this condensate, not once and not twice, 100 times, 1,000 times, have tasted condensate from different companies, okay? And what does the condensate taste like? It tastes like absolute pure water. In fact, it's distilled water, okay? It's because it's been boiled to be liquid. It doesn't have any taste to it. Even after it's been cooked and all kinds of stuff, it has no taste to it. And from the other side, companies have tremendous hakpazes that foods, you shouldn't have a cross of taste between one food and another food. Okay? So companies make all kinds of efforts to make sure that there isn't any carryover of taste from one food to another, and they're more than happy to use sheer steam between one product and another, because as the scientists tell them, and as experience tells them, there's no transfer in time. Okay? Millions of people who have bought foods don't complain and say, oh, this food tastes like that food. Right? People, you never opened up a can of corn and said, oh, wow, this tastes like peas. Because there's a blea coming through the pot. They were made in the same kettle, it's called a retort, the same machinery. You ever open up a corn and say, wow, you know, there's like a little taste here of peas over here. No one ever said that. Why not? Because from the company's perspective, they believe the scientists and they believe the experience of their customers, which is no bleas are transferring through. They're not getting any bleas through. So we're saying that the dim side of it, we can open up our Shulchan Aruch, tells us that there are bleas going through. And in this case, the steam carries bleas, the bleas go through the kli, so we should say it should be usur. But the other side of it is we have five different reasons, angles that we can come in and say, we don't see anything. No one sees any bleas. You don't see it in the steam, you don't see it in the food, you don't see anything going through. So which way do we take this? Okay, so this brings us to another set of dinim, which is the dinim of Te'imus Kveil. Okay, there's a dinim in Taliches that is Te'imus Kveil. If you have a food, trace down to kosher or basar to chol, and you want to know if it's trace, so you can ask them to taste it. So Ashkenazim are not saying on Te'imus Kveil. We're not saying on Te'imus Kveil, but the Shachas, we are saying on Te'imus Yisrael. So I'm asking you, did you ever open up a can of corn and it tasted like peas? Or you want to go taste water in a steam system, say, taste the condensate. Can you tell me if the condensate tastes like something? So now there are people who argue on that and say, no, can't do that. That only works for a specific case. If I go into a factory and I taste their water, I say, okay, the water doesn't taste like anything. I taste the condensate, it doesn't taste like anything. So now I can eat those eggs, even though the same condensate is used to cook the ham also. I see in this factory today, I can eat today's eggs. But maybe I can't do that for tomorrow. Meaning I tasted the water today, I did Te'imus Yisrael on the water today, the Yid knows that this water doesn't taste like ham, so now today I can eat the eggs that are made in this company. But what about tomorrow? Maybe tomorrow the water will taste like that. Or now, of course, the case I told you is not true. I can't taste that water. I potentially can't taste that water if it maybe has a time of chazal in it. Okay? But I go to a company that makes corn and peas, okay? And I say, I'll taste the water. So can I deduce from the fact that the condensate tastes like plain water that in the hand plate it also tastes like water? I think, well, I didn't do it once. I didn't do it twice. I did it 100 times in 20 different situations. In situations that all seem to be the same. The steam system is the same system. So I changed it. I'll test it in 10 different places to make sure I get all the variables right. And they always taste the same. It always tastes like clean water. So does that let me... So people have argued that I can't take that further and say, well, in tomorrow's situation, I'll go to the ham place, in that place it should be mozzarella. Because who knows? Team Israel has always said, sort of, but yeah, but after it happened, and I'm talking about a specific situation, some chazer fell into my chonz, I taste the chonz to see if it tastes like chazer. But that doesn't mean that next week, if I throw a chazer, I can assume it's not going to be next in time. Not because of the difference of chazer. I mean, it's because of how do I know the team is going to work? So there are people arguing from that side. But the truth is, that there's precedent for the shiloh. Almost exactly this shiloh, not with our situation, but this type of shiloh was asked to the Ramah. Okay, this is true in the Ramah. I think it's known valid that he was asked like this. There were rumors, or they knew, that the barrels that were used to hold olive oil were smeared with chaza fat. So the shiloh was, how come you don't have to drink, eat the olive oil? Okay, and this has comes up every so often. It's right now again the kashrut organizations are dealing with it from a different angle. There have always been questions about olive oil. Maybe there are mixes of trace mix into it. So people said that the barrels are smeared with chaga. If I remember correctly, that was the thing. They were smeared with chaga. So the shayla was, how is that eaten? And there are muscles like this. So there's two parts to the tshuva. Okay? The short answer to the tshuva is thousands of people have eaten olive oil. No one ever said that it tastes like chaza. We've tasted it a million times. Jewish and non-Jewish people have tasted it who knows how many times. No one ever said that their olive oil tastes like chaza. So what does that tell us? So the answer to what does it tell us is the rest of the truth. He has all kinds of svaras, so maybe it's a time of God, maybe it's all kinds of explanations for why to explain from the so to speak from the Shulchan Aruch side, of course he wasn't saying from the Shulchan Aruch, but from the din side of it, why should it be mutter? But the beginning, like the short answer to the question is, if thousands of people have tasted this food and they never saw time, then we know that there's no time. Not today, not yesterday, and not tomorrow either. We can extrapolate from lots of life experience that if there wasn't time until now, we saw, you know, we keep seeing this food, there's not time in this food. So team is Yisrael, not just for the past, not just to say, you know, I taste this specific mixture, I saw no team is Yisrael, I want to eat it. But even, so to speak, for the future, to say, this type of situation doesn't create time. So we're allowed to say that, so to speak, which is, that's what the Rambam says. So, in Cain, why don't we say this? So we should say the same thing here also. We think, we don't see any time. So let's say that for 100 reasons that we said before him, there's no time. So even though, so to speak, by the books, there should be time, we should be able to say, is nowadays there's no time, and so we can ignore the fact that companies share steam. So in fact, there are contemporary persons who are still like that, and who say, okay, there's no time. We don't see it. As we've been explaining, it's not happening. There's no time in this food and you're allowed to eat it. You don't have to worry about this thing because you're ignoring. However, in 1979, okay, Rabbi Shaul, who was probably just starting to work in Kashrus, he's a Rashiva in Tavdas, but he worked, he has been for many years in one of the only Paskim. He wrote a shiloh. He wrote five kashrus shilohs to Rav Moshe. He was a Talmud of Rav Moshe. He wrote five shilohs to Rav Moshe. And one of the shilohs was about what we're talking about with the drop of variation. He wasn't talking about the steam system in the company. Well, maybe he was. He was talking about in canning, okay, the way you put food, the way you can food is, well, the chachma of canning food is, you put the food into the can, you seal the can shut, that no new microbes can get into there. And then you cook the can so that any microbes and any pathogens that are inside of that can will be killed. And then, since no new ones can get in, now the food will last forever. It won't spoil because there's nothing in there, there are no microbes in there, and no new ones can get in either because it's been sealed shut. Okay, that's the chokmah of putting food in the can. Okay, we put our tuna or corn or something like that into a can, we seal it shut, kill everything that's inside it with heat, and then it's good to go. It'll last forever. It'll last for a million years because nothing can get into it. So the shaila was that should we, and usually that cooking is done with steam. That's the common way that you cook those things is with steam. So should we be choshish that time changes from one to the other? And Rabbi mentioned many of the reasons we've been talking about is should those reasons be reasons to say there's no time passing through, and therefore we shouldn't be makbid on bleas transferring in and out of the transfer, you know, today they make pork and beans, and tomorrow they want to make canned corn, should we say you have to do something about it, or you can't let them do that in the same steam, the pork and beans, and then followed by that with the canned corn? So now, Rav Moshe answered some of those questions in writing. Some of those truths are printed in Igros Moshe, they're in writing. But this one was not printed, to my knowledge. It's not a printed tshuva to answer this question. And I don't believe there is a written tshuva on it. But Radovsky says that what Moshe said to him was something along the lines of, if we figured out something scientifically, we came up with we have a perception of how things work, that doesn't give us a right to throw out a din in Shulchan Aruch. Okay, what we want to do is, we want to say, go to Siman Tzadi Beis, which says that Tipas Chalav, and cut those pages out of our Shulchan Aruch. We want to say, those dinim are not true anymore. Either they were never true, or they're not true anymore. We just want to throw those dinim out. So Ramosha's approach to this was, we figured out, we understand how something works, that doesn't give us a right to just throw the din out. Okay? Now, the people who disagree, there are contemporary people who disagree, say, we're not throwing the din out. We're just saying, it doesn't work in our situation. And the way we're set up in, that it just doesn't work. Okay? But Ramosha's saying was, we're effectively throwing out that din, so Ramosha said we're not able to do that. And there is a precedent to that approach also, which is that there's a machlokes rishonim, whether there's bleas in tiglias or not. Okay? And what's the din? What's the din about bleas in tiglias? Most rishonim hold, and the machab passes, that there are no bleas in tiglias. You could use the same glass for hot treif and kosher, milk and fleshings, hummus, pesach, all that. You can use something different. Okay? That's the time you can use glasses back and forth for everything. Because there are no bleas in tiglias. The Rama says that we're machmir for those rishonim who hold that there are bleas. Now, every person who looks at it, scientists today will tell you for sure, but even in days of the Ramban, even in days of Rishonim, they don't see any bleeds in glass. They don't see bleeds going through into glass. But their machmir to say is, even though the way we view the din, the way we view the situation, it doesn't seem to be bleeds. So we're going to be cautious for those who hold that there are bleeds. Okay? And that's along the lines of what Ramosha is saying, which is that even though scientifically we don't see any bleas, we don't understand that in the people's hall. We don't understand how it could work. Even so, we take it in as it stands, and we would therefore our searches. And in fact, most of the all the reputable hashgachas accept this approach, whether they know it's from emotion, they don't know it's from emotion, which is to say that there are bleas, and they are machmir, that steam should not be used for trade and cultures. The same thing is used for both. But as we'll see in a minute, because of the very serious question as to whether there are bleas on it, they take a very open to coolers that they maybe wouldn't have been samuch on in other cases. Okay? Let's call it like that. The fact that it's very questionable whether there are bleas here altogether leaves them open to coolers and to the ability to say, you know, maybe that's it, okay, and you'll hear in a second a little bit of that. Okay? And among the OU's postmen, the OU has two postmen, Rabbi Belsky and Rabbi Shachter. Rabbi Belsky takes the approach much more like the Moshe, which is, we can't throw the din out, and as opposed to Rabbi Shachter, who takes more of an approach of, we don't see any bleas over here, and he's open to just about anything. They have their different ways of approaching, but he's open to many more, to the ability to say cool, even if in theory he wouldn't have said that in a different situation, but for a seems shyly he would be making on. Okay. So let's talk about four ways that they have for dealing with steam. Okay, so shared steam. Okay, I was going to go through quickly. It's not going to get you the practical how you deal with this. Okay, one is the simple one. Okay, which is don't let them return condensate from the tray. In this place, that makes the ham. In fact, that's what they're doing. They're saying the condensate that forms when they cook the hams, okay, that condensate that forms, which is the tray of condensate, goes down the drain. It does not go back to the boiler. So the boiler uses water from the street. It uses it to cook eggs and sugar, they're kosher, and that condensate comes back to the boiler. The steam that goes to the ham, that condensate goes to the drain, goes to the floor. So the boiler is cooking with fresh water and water that was used to cook kosher products. Okay? But it is not, never has condensate coming back from the tray. So that's the simple way to deal with bombs. Ta-da! No tray condensate coming back to the boiler. Okay? Now, aside from the fact that that gives a cost to the company, because they now have to cook up fresh water, there's also, for the hashgacha wise, that serious responsibility to watch that they actually do that. So they're telling them to pour money down the drain. Literally, they're pouring money down the drain. Okay, they're taking hot water, pouring it down the drain, and replacing it with cold water that they have to heat up. So you have to monitor it that they're actually doing the job. So it gives the hashgacha more responsibility to make sure that they're not cheating on something that they have a tremendous incentive to do. It doesn't make any sense to them to throw this water down the drain. Okay, so that gives the hashgacha more work to do. Okay. Another eight that people have is, they say, you're choishish that there's tam in this water. We will add into the water something that will give a bad taste into the water, which is to say that in case any trace leaves are in that water, there will be no some tam left gam into the next product. Imagine if we took the condensate coming back from the ham and we poured soap into it. Okay? We put detergent into it. Let's say that we could do that. Then, if there are any bleeds in that water, they've now mixed together with this thing which is pogum, which is nice and tam lefgam, into the next thing. So if any bleeds transfer from the steam into the egg, that bleed that transfers will be nice and tam lefgam. Well, not to it. Okay, so they say, no, good idea, let's put something into the water that'll say if there's any tam, it'll be nice and tam lefgam. Okay? Now, is something wrong with that? Would it be mevatel lechatchila to put something in like that? That's a good question. There's a few answers to that question. One is, from the company's perspective and from our view of it, there's no time in there altogether. We're not being mevatel yet, so we're just sort of like covering ourselves. We don't really see any time. But here also, we're not putting isser into our food. What we're saying is, this steam is going to be used to heat up our food. It's not going into the food, it's being used to heat up the food. We're preventing any time that we don't, if it'll get into our food, it will be nice time of God. We're preventing it from getting into our food the way that it'll make it, as opposed to putting it in a way and letting it be bubble. Okay? The third answer, which is probably the better answer, is in these kind of, because of the shilas we talked about steam, those kind of things like Devatlus and the Chatila, and you'll hear in a second that Hanan, okay, people won't be mocking on them. They'll say, many approach shilas about steam as sort of as a chumra, because we don't see any time in this thing anyhow. So dinim that are beyond the strict requirements of din. I mean, we make sure there's no time over here. But as far as, let's say, Hanan, as far as bitulis and chatila, they won't be as worried about it as you would in a normal food. Okay? You say bitulis and chatila, but bitulis and chatila is a rabbanon. It's only a chumra. It doesn't make the food taste to the other. Okay, don't worry about it. For steam, you don't have to worry about it. Okay, that's an example of how I don't think it's really a shilah, but if it were to be a shilah, they would say, you don't have to worry about that first steam system. Okay. Now, this idea to be piping the steam has got some halachic shilahs and some practical shilahs to it. But the halachic shilahs are how pogrom that there has to be. I don't know if you saw this, there's a chavistaz in Kuf Gimel, okay, who talks about what happens when you make something pogrom, how pogrom does it have to be. Does it have to be nifsum afil or just not royal, not shlikadar chachila at that point? What happens if it has a begima, like in our case, which is very for real, the begima is not going to stay in there. What happens is, when you put something pogrom into that water, there's all kinds of things to put into the water. What happens is, the boiler, the water tastes horrible. Okay? But as soon as you boil it up and turn it to steam, guess what the steam tastes like? Nothing. The steam tastes like just plain old water. All those chemicals stay right where they are in the boiler. They don't transfer into the steam. So does that, the fact that the water became mercantile in the boiler, should that be enough to make the water now not able to trace something up? Or should I say, I just took the begema out. As soon as it leaves the boiler, as soon as it gets to my egg, there's nothing pogrom about the water anymore at all. So does that help me anything? Have I accomplished anything by being pogrom the water if that pegima doesn't transfer until it hits the egg? Okay, now, that's a shilah of how to read the chavitas. If the chavitas is, it's mutter, we'll also that give. But of course, the opposite question is you're going to be scratching your head and everything. You're telling me that all the pogum, the water tastes horrible. If you scoop up that water, it tastes horrible. All of that horrible taste stays in the boil. But at the same time, the ham taste goes up. Where's the sense over here? You think taste the water in the boil, it tastes horrible. And you say, but now when I boil it up into steam, what goes up into the steam is water vapor and ham taste. Now, I don't taste a thing in that water. You think no, you are missing the taste of the ham. Even though the taste of the soap or the whatever chemicals you're going to put in there, that taste, you tasted before, you don't taste it anymore. But the ham didn't manage to go up. Something seems a little fishy over here. Like, what's going on here? You put in a double pike, the pike stop doesn't go up anymore, but you've been questioned that the ham still does go up. That makes it hard to believe. Okay? But then there's also practical questions, which are, as far as putting in, there's a limit to what you can put into a boiler. Boilers are very sensitive. There's a limit. You can't just put anything you want to into a boiler. You can just pour chemicals into there. Okay, so there are limits to what you can put into there. And to be plugging it, you can only be plugging it in situations where companies use steam indirectly. If you use steam, the steam goes right into the food, like it does in some food. If you have a drink box of juice, okay, that had steam put right into the food. It didn't go on the outside with indirect contact. It had direct contact, the steam went right into the food. Well, no one in their right mind is going to let you put a double pipe into the water and it's going to then be used for direct steam injection. The steam can go right into the food. They're going to be concerned, rightfully so, that some of that bad taste will transfer over into your food. So they won't let you do that. Okay? There's another case, which is, you pass this thing also, which is, we have a rule that ein ha'blua yotze min kli l'kli blood roitzim. Bleas don't transfer for two kelim that touch each other. Okay? So there are kelim that are set up that instead of one wall being between the steam and the egg, there are two walls. It's a double wall kli. I'm sorry. It's a double wall in between the steam and the food. So even if we think bleas go through a kli, when the two kelim are touching each other, there's no moisture in between them, so no bleas will transfer to those kelim. So the palm transfers from the kli, from the steam into the kli, and from the ketchup into the kli, but the two kelim are touching each other, no bleas can go between them. And in fact, in this ham company, we almost did that. The ham company almost set it up that there should be no bleas because it's in a fancier piece of equipment called a heat exchanger. Okay. That's more sophisticated than you, but more complicated piece of equipment. And we were going to set it up that there was going to be double wall between the steam and the food. Okay, so that no bleas could transfer. Okay, but then, the last eighth that there is will give you a picture as to how people, when I said that people say, well, for steam systems we can be NACO, I'm going to now tell you a far that people have said, okay, which you, if not that we're talking about steam, it would be hard to believe someone could say this. They say, listen, we're being choshish that time transfers through the dark naturally. Why? Because it says in Sadi Bay that people's called the bleed goes through. Okay? We don't want to get rid of that then. How much bleed goes through the dark naturally? So we say it's a suffix. We don't know how much goes through. We're choshish that it goes through enough to be nice and hot. But does it say in Sadi Bay how much goes through? It goes at least to be nice and hot. We're choshish that it goes through enough to be nice and hot. So that means it's at least more than 1 in 60. What about more than that? What about, does it go through 5%? Does it go through 10%, 20%? We have no din that says that it does. The din just says it goes through enough to be nice and hot. Okay, now, we have another set of din. Another din, move to a different set of din, in Hilchos Yayin, which is wine that's diluted. Wine that's diluted in 6 parts of water becomes not wine anymore. Let's say you don't make hagafen on it anymore. If it was stam yayin, it becomes mutter. So, and that's because when wine is diluted in more than 6 parts of water or more, it no longer has the characteristics of wine. It might have a little bit of taste of wine, but it doesn't have the body and the character that you expect from wine. Therefore, it loses its dinim of wine. So now, you could imagine that the water that's on the other side of the steam system has a tam that we're not sophisticated enough to taste. We'll say the din says.
Can you hold on for 2 minutes?
matter. The din says that time goes through. But if the amount of bleed, imagine if you're cooking wine on one side, would the bleed that goes through be enough that you should, it should look like wine? Now, so we could say we're not sophisticated enough to notice the time. Maybe it's really time. It didn't tell us this time. And we just don't notice it. If we were had a finer sense of taste, maybe we would notice it. But if the stuff was as concentrated as wine that's been diluted in six parts, would you notice it? So you say, come on. You have to be dead to not notice that. Anybody can notice that. You don't have to have such a fine, you take wine or grape juice and mix it in six parts of water, and it tastes a lot like wine. It has a good, you know, it has a lot of similarity to wine. It's not a subtle taste. It has a nice pronounced taste to it. So this stuff is not diluted that much. So we only have to take the din as far as what it says. The din says it's nice and palm. Is it nice and palm to the point that it's a sixth? No. We could tell by ourselves that it's not giving a sixth worth of palm. So that means is, we could say, and we'll even be safe, instead of saying it's a sixth, which is like 14%, we'll say it doesn't give palm more than 10%. Okay? The bleed that transfers through the kli doesn't give more than 10% of palm. And we, okay, now say, listen to what we're doing over here. We're saying, and this is not, what I am telling you now is not theoretical. There are people who do this very lemaisa. They base their hashkafa based on this set. They say, look, I have to believe that time goes through. 1%, 2%, 4%, 5%, more than 10%, I don't have to be chayshish. So, and because of that, they came up, they have all kinds of clues. Like, for example, let's say the food that I'm making is only 5% milchus. And I want to make a pyramid food afterwards. Okay, it's 5% milchus. The amount of time that's going to transfer through is going to be less than 10%. It means the amount of time that's going to pass through is going to be a half of 1%. Half of 1% is not nice and time. It's less than shishim. Let's say it transfers two times. Okay, in more sophisticated systems, it transfers two times. Say, well, the first time it got knocked down to 10%. The next time it transferred, it got knocked down to 1%. That's also about the shishim. Let's say I'm cooking stam yayin, which is also a common occurrence. I cook stam yayin. So stam yayin is about the bashisha. So even in one transfer, it becomes mutter. Okay, all kinds of cools like this, that you look at me and you say to me, you must be crazy. Like we figured out that the amount of air that goes through is more than shisha, but less than shisha. We made this hashar. And again, the reason why we would say that is because the din tells us that we have to be choshes for these bleas. We don't see any signs of these bleas. And because of that, there are these types of cools that, again, you would not be samachan if you were doing this, regular cooking something in a pot and something selling, you wouldn't do this. But because of the serious question as to whether there are bleas, people are samachan. So I just want to summarize and come to the point that I was trying to make, which is, firstly, we talked about steam systems and how they're used and how something could look kosher, and in fact, the thing that's being used to heat it is in fact trade. Okay, that's one thing, that was the specific thing we were talking about. A second lesson that we learned was that a person, to even know to ask the shayla, let alone to give the answer, has to know the practical situation they're looking at. You walk into a hotel kitchen and not know that their steam is getting heat from the trade kitchen, and you could miss the boat. You could kasher and run everything perfectly, but never realize that your food is trade, or it's considered trade, because of things that happen across the hallway in the trade part of the kitchen. That's just a lesson in understanding a situation to know the shilas, and for surely if you want to answer the shilas. The third one is, it's a general lesson, which was, here's a situation where most people's understanding of the metzias and of the din would tell them that this thing is mutter. Most people who look at this would say, I'm not talking about even average people like us, I'm talking about most, more sophisticated rabbis will look at this din and say, the metzias and the din tells me that this thing is mutter. That's what it looks like to me. However, Ramosha said, he looked at the same thing. They told him the shayla. Okay, and I've seen the written shayla, and they explained to him clearly enough what the shayla is. And his perspective on it was, well, we don't just throw out a din so quickly. We don't just throw that out. That was how he answered the shayla. And just as far as our approach to how you answer a shayla, is that when, even after our discussion, and we figured out and we looked into it, and we think that the thing is mutter, when we turn to someone bigger who tells us, no, it doesn't work like that, he has understanding of being different than that, then we won't realize our place. And Hagam, there are Hashgachos who are not makbid on this, but by and large, most people take the more, if we could say, conservative approach, which is in effect, whether they know it or not, came from Moshe, which that is, someone bigger than us decided that this thing, we should not look at it the way we think of it, and therefore we accepted that, didn't like it. Okay. Thank you.